Hello, and welcome to the Journal of Accountancy podcast. I'm Courtney Vian, a senior editor with the Journal of Accountancy. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Robbie Riggs. He and his father, Kelly Riggs, are the authors of the new book, Counter Mentor Leadership: How to Unlock the Potential of the Four-Generation Workplace. Robbie is a corporate consultant, and he's worked with companies ranging from startups to Fortune 100s. And his dad, Kelly, is an author, speaker, and business performance coach. Robbie is also a millennial, and his dad is a baby boomer, and they both bring their perspective to their book. And I can tell you, whether you're a boomer or you're one of the kids, you will find this book a really fun read. If you want to learn more about it, you can go to their website, www.countermentors.com. So today, Robbie's going to talk to us about leading different generations and mentoring and what employers can do to retain millennials. But first, please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
Did you know 75% of people now prefer to pay by credit or debit? With CPA Charge, you can let your clients pay their bill online and you'll get the reporting details you need for easy reconciliation. AICPA members can sign up at cpacharge.com/podcast and get your program fee waived for 6 months.
Hi, Robbie. It's nice to have you here.
I'm excited to be here, Courtney. I can't wait to talk about this. And, you know, the pops couldn't make it because he's still trying to figure out how to work his fax machine. So I'm sorry he couldn't figure out how to get here. But I'm excited to talk about this, a topic that really, in the world of finance and accounting especially, is becoming more and more of an issue of attracting and retaining great millennial talent. So I'm excited to be here.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Now, in your book, you don't talk about baby boomers and millennials so much as you talk about two groups of employees, and you call them the bosses, and that's an acronym, BOSS, and the kids, KIDS. Can you explain that?
Yeah, you know, we didn't want to continue the proliferation of putting people in a box of all boomers are like this and all millennials are like this. And that was something that we talked a lot about. I mean, can you imagine any other group of people, whether, you know, you're talking about gender or race or anything, stereotyping all of them? I mean, absolutely not, right? People would go crazy. So we did not want to do that. We did not want to continue to say there are these millennials and those boomers, because I don't think that's right. I don't think it's fair. So what we really wanted to do was create this, the personification of stereotypes, and call them something different. So we jokingly call the boss the boomer old school supervisor. That's what that acronym means. And the kids are the know-it-all digital self-promoters. Now I'll tell you, I wanted it to be know-it-all digital superstars, but the pops and I had to compromise somewhere. So we leverage these two acronyms to really create the archetype of the both generations. So it was no longer saying all millennials are like this or all boomers are like this, because the reality is, when we talk about the boss, that is, there are, you know, even down to older millennials, but this is less about your age or your birth year and more about characteristics and behaviors that you exhibit. So that's why we were really intentional about calling them the boss and the kids. We also had a lot of fun with, you know, the quote unquote kids these days. So we had a lot of fun from that. That was kind of our motivation. And we really enjoyed it and made it more about the behaviors that an individual exhibits than when they were born.
So can you tell us a little something about the behaviors of each of these groups?
Absolutely. So we have a whole section kind of in one of the early chapters in our book where we outline kind of what those key behaviors are. And it's things like, let's talk about the boss first. The boss doesn't care what you have to say. They've always done it the right way. The boss relies more on their experience than research and innovation that's coming forward. The boss wants you to sit down, shut up, and do what you're told, because that's what he or she had to do when they first started. The boss cares more about the performance of last year and what that means for next year than they do about finding a better way to do it next year. I mean, these very traditional, we've always done it this way, change averse, very, very reluctant to leverage technology outside of email. The boss loves email. So that's the typical, you know, boss behaviors. Now, on the kids side, I'd rather text you than talk to you. I'd rather jump on Facebook or Twitter to find out what's going on than, you know, opening the Wall Street Journal. I think that you're come in at 8 o'clock, leave at 5. Garbage is absolutely ridiculous. I can get more done before 10 o'clock than you can in a full 8 to 5 weeks. So again, two completely different mindsets that drive completely different behaviors.
Now, often these two groups can come into conflict in the workplace because they have such different attitudes. And in your book, you talk about how each group defines respect and accountability differently. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, Courtney, that may be the understatement of the year, but probably the biggest understatement you've ever said on this podcast, that they just come in conflict. I mean, we're talking about an all-out battle that's going on right now in the workplace between the way things have always been versus the way that things can be, or the way that the younger generation, what we would call the kids, of course, how the kids want things to be. And it does fundamentally start with those differences. And we do a fun exercise with clients where we sit down and we ask everyone in the room, we bring together a cross-functional group, and we ask them to define words like respect and leadership and loyalty and hard work. I mean, it's fascinating when you see the differences. And it's always, as always, typically the older generation in the room is looking at me like, are you freaking kidding me? We're going to write these down right now. And then as we go around the room and people share their definitions, there's that, they look back at me and give me that, oh my gosh, look, because it is so different. The idea of what respect is, I mean, the younger generation believes that I will give you respect when you earn my respect. And the older generation, the boss is going, you're going to respect me because I'm the boss. That's how things work. You respect authority figures. And that fundamentally creates a extreme chasm and conflict point between two different generations and two individuals. Look, my favorite definition of conflict is that conflict is simply frustrated expectations. And when we don't set clear expectations, we are bound definitionally for this extreme conflict because we will not come to the same conclusion or we will not operate the same way. And as leaders, we believe you are the anecdote. You are the solution here. And as a leader, you must seek to understand the different perspectives and frankly own the relationship by setting great expectations. That is how you attract retain great talent.
What do the kids feel respect is?
You know, it's interesting because there is a strong sense with the boss that I have already earned your respect by the definition of I am the manager, or the supervisor, or the vice president, or whatever. Whereas when the kids come into the workplace, they go, hold on, time out. I don't know you from Adam. So how in the world do you think that I'm going to respect you just because you have a title? Are you out of your mind? Like, no, you have to earn my respect. Look, I tell the kids all the time, whether I'm talking to, mentoring my fraternity that I was in college, or I'm talking to young millennial talent in different organizations, that is fundamentally flawed logic, that you can't expect the boss to respect you out of the gate, but you expect that they have to earn your respect. Like, that doesn't make sense. You can't have it both ways. So we talk a lot to the millennial generation about, you need to come in with a sense of, I need to earn the respect, or the boss needs to earn my respect, but I also got to work hard so that they'll respect me. So it goes two ways. This is absolutely a two-way street. And again, the problem is the definitional understanding of the word respect is different. And leaders need to understand that, or they're going to continue to struggle retaining that younger generation.
So what are some ways that the two generations or the two groups can bridge this gap?
Now, this is going to sound like ridiculously cliche and overly simple, but I got to tell you, Courtney, this isn't hard. And to everyone listening to this pod right now, you're going to be so frustrated by my answer, because specifically when we're talking about the traditional accounting personality, that detail-oriented analytical individual who is like, Robbie, I don't want to do that. But okay, are you ready? You have to talk about it. I mean, you have to intentionally invest time in communicating, what does this mean? What does it mean to respect, to be loyal, to work hard? All of these things. What are your expectations of me as your leader? How can I propel you to the next level in your career? I want to invest in you. Well, I'm telling you, if you want to be successful, especially as a professional accountant operating in this VUCA world where it's so challenging to identify and retain great talent, the way that you do that, the younger generation wants to be coached and developed. Okay, if you're struggling to retain talent, it's because you're sticking them in the room and say, just do your job, just sit down, shut up, and do what you're told. That's not going to cut it. They will at lunch, jump on their phone, apply for 5 different jobs on LinkedIn, accept a job on Friday, and put in their notice on Monday. That is the reality. If you do not engage them, coach them, develop them, they are out. So simply, the anecdote here is leadership. And in this case, leadership in the form of being a great communicator.
So coaching and development are keys to retaining younger people in the workplace?
Oh my gosh. A key is the biggest understatement. I mean, when you look at, you read the studies, whether done by Deloitte or Aon Hewitt or Gallup, when you look at these studies, what millennials want, what the kids want is to have a sense of purpose. Okay. Remember, we grew up in the 24/7 news cycle, and we were told we're killing the planet. You're killing the world. People are the problem. And our generation has been bombarded with that. Oftentimes propaganda, oftentimes fact. We've been bombarded with that our entire lives. So we're like, okay, we're going to be the generation that solves this. So number one, we want a sense of purpose. Number two, in our job, if we can't be the boss, right? If we can't be Mark Zuckerberg and start Facebook and be billionaires, then we want to be in an environment where we are being coached and developed, where we feel like my boss, my organization cares about me and my professional development. Remember, our priorities are different. When we look at the boss and the kids, their priorities for what they want to get out of the workplace and out of the job are different. When the boss entered the workplace, he or she wanted 2.25 kids. They wanted the white picket fence. They wanted the pension and the gold watch after 30 years. Millennials, that's their nightmare. The kids look at that and go, are you freaking kidding me? No, I want to travel. I want to live a life that I would be proud to post on Instagram. I mean, that's what the millennial cares about right now. So in order to do that, they want to feel like they're being invested in, they're being coached and developed. That is the key.
Now, in your book, you talk about the counter-mentor leadership framework. Can you explain mm-hmm. that a little bit?
Yeah, the answer, the solution to this is leadership. And I want to be clear, it is leadership that is counter to what is commonly accepted today as management. You know, everything that we do today in the workplace traditionally and really the typically accepted style of management goes all the way back to 1911 when Frederick Winslow Taylor wrote the book, The Principles of Scientific Management. Now think about this. We are leveraging techniques and tactics that are 107 years old that Taylor wrote about in factories with pig iron handlers. So what we say is that you have to do things counter to that point of view. And counter in this case is an acronym. And it's communicate, own the relationship, understand their perspectives, negotiate the obstacles, which by the way, yeah, there are all the old traditional leadership obstacles that have been around for the last 50 years, but there's a whole new set of obstacles, technology, complexity, the pace of change, the generational differences. There are these huge, huge obstacles that we've never seen before. The T is teaching the essential skills. You actually have to intentionally invest your time in developing and growing your people. And then the E and R are very much the foundation, the crux. This is where the rubber meets the road. And that's, you have to execute this in the real world. Okay. If you look at this methodology or this book that we wrote as some academic theoretical exercise, it's absolutely worthless. It's not worth the pages it's printed on. You have to invest in executing and practicing this in the real world. And then of course, the R is you have to review your progress consistently. Over and over and over, you have to look back. And really, we believe that the counter process, that cycle of leadership, is the answer to being effective in the and really unlocking the potential of the four-generation workplace.
So how does this style of leadership tie into retaining and motivating younger generations?
Well, I think fundamentally what the younger generation wants is to be part of something. And remember, let's think about how the kids were raised, which was completely different in a completely different environment than the boss was raised. Okay, the boss was raised by the silent generation traditionalists. They were told and taught, you know, kids, young people are to be seen and not heard, and you're going to sit and pay your dues, and eventually you'll be the adult, and then you can make those decisions. The kids were raised completely counter to that. When we got into school, things weren't done as individuals, right? We took exams in groups. That makes boomers head spin. You know, when I was getting my MBA, my first accounting exam was a group exam. Think about that, in accounting. So, I mean, we were taught completely differently. So our expectations are completely differently. So the idea of collaboration and coaching and development, those are all things that are fundamental to who we are. And frankly, they're paramount to what we want out of a job.
And so what are the implications of that for leadership?
Well, I think that it's completely different to the way things have always been done. You know, when we look at the traditional model, especially in the professional services, that has to be turned on its head. I am not saying that you need to give participation trophies, okay? Which, by the way, boomers, you invented the participation trophies. Who do you think gave them to the kids? Okay, so just pump the brakes. I'm not saying that that's what the younger generation needs. What I'm saying is the thoughtful, intentional investment of your time in that individual to make them feel valued. That's what the younger generation needs. So you talk about the implications on leaders. Leaders have to be intentional about how they invest their time. We talk about, we talk about in detail in our book that leadership simply is an exercise in changing the way you invest your time. And this is what we're talking about, investing it in the activities that your people need. And I'm telling you, this isn't exclusive to the millennial generation or to the kids. All human beings want to feel value. The difference is the younger generation was empowered at a young age to say, we're not going to take it, which is funny because the lyrics of those songs were written by boomers. But anyway, it's so much how we were raised that it was okay for us to push back starting at an early age. And of course, that manifests itself in the workplace.
Now, when you discuss the counter-mentor leadership framework, you talk about a tool called the counter-mentor one-on-one meeting. How is this different from your typical one-on-one meeting?
That's such a great question. You know, typically, and I experienced this early in my career in consulting, and the pop saw this back when he was, you know, riding a horse-drawn carriage to work early in his career. The one-on-one meeting has become this check-the-box activity where we kind of meet, whether it's at the water cooler or walking down the hall or a quick, you know, drive by the office. And that five-minute interaction, like, ooh, I met with my people one-on-one. They're engaged. Okay, that's an absolute joke. Okay, that doesn't work. And we coach at all different levels in organizations all over the world, implementing what we call the counter mentor meeting or the counter mentor one-on-one meeting. And when we think about the CMM as the abbreviation that we use for that, it is a prescriptive, very direct, intentional meeting one-on-one every single week for 30 minutes with each of your people. A meeting that drives accountability. It drives the relationship. It gives you an opportunity for recognizing and appreciating that individual. Gives you the opportunity to anchor back to your key expectations and ensure alignment and clarity of mission. All of these are key things. I don't care what generation you're in. Everyone agrees that these are critically important, but no one invests the time in them. So we teach a very, very prescriptive way of having this meeting. We have outlines for it. We have resources for people that to walk through that meeting and host them and facilitate them with their people. And Courtney, you know that I can't give you the special sauce of the meeting on this podcast. You're going to have to go buy the book, Counter Mentor Leadership. Find it on Amazon.
That's fine. And you also talk about reverse mentoring.
Oh, it's huge. You know, reverse mentoring actually was pioneered, one of the many things pioneered by Jack Welch. And the idea of reverse mentoring, I think, was a bit of a joke that turned into something serious. In the early 2000s, Jack had a meeting with his top 300 executives, and he implored them, you need to go find those kids in your organization to tell you about this internet thing. That was the spawn of reverse mentoring. And it's important to note that for the first time in human history, the younger generation has something more to offer the older generation than just a can-do attitude and a blank canvas. We are actually bringing in knowledge and skills to the workplace that the boss doesn't possess. Whether we're talking about technology, social media, different creative tools, these are things that we are being taught starting in elementary school, all the way up through secondary and post-secondary education. So we are quite literally bringing in skills that the older generation doesn't exist. I mean, this is breaking the traditional mold that has been around since the beginning of time, where the younger generation comes in, they're in some sort of apprenticeship or internship program, they learn skills, and then they begin to execute. And over time, the older generation retires and the younger generation takes over. And that is being turned on its head because the younger generation has skills the older generation doesn't from day one.
Now, I know you don't believe in putting people into generational boxes, but we do hear a lot about Gen Z who are now entering the workforce, or as you call them, the digital natives. Do they differ significantly from millennials in any way that you've seen?
So, Courtney, that's a great question. And I think that this younger generation, Gen Z, you know, we love to call them the digital natives because they are a generation that from the age 18 months have been on the iPad or the iPhone, swiping, zooming, pinching, doing all those things with their fingers. One of my favorite videos is seeing that young generation with the analog magazine and they're swiping and nothing's moving. It's one of my favorite videos.
Yeah.
But so this younger generation, we don't really know what they're going to be like in the workplace because they are just entering the oldest of that generation are just now turning 18 and 19 years old, entering the workplace right out of high school. So by all accounts at this point, the younger generation is going to be very similar to millennials. There are people that are theorizing that this generation is going to swing a little bit more to the middle, in that chasm between the boss and the kids. That's not my opinion. I think they're going to continue to be to that far right in terms of very, very similar to the millennial in terms of their expectations and digital. And oh, by the way, they were raised by millennials. So, or they're being raised by millennials. So I think that my hypothesis here is that you're going to see a continued generation of individuals that are heavy on digital, that want to add value, that want flexibility and want to really be coached and developed early on.
And how about the Generation Xers? Do they fall more under the boss spectrum or the kids spectrum?
Oh, poor Gen X. You know, they busted onto the scene with their Pepsi Super Bowl commercial and Michael Jackson, and then they all became boomers. Okay, no, that's not true. That's not true. I take it back. Xers, I love you. I don't mean that. Really what we see with Gen X, and we, again, this is why we were so adamant about creating the two distinct groups by behavior, because we really see X's fall pretty much 50-50 to having boomer tendencies, what we would call the boss, or millennial tendency, of course, what we call the kids. So we actually see that the Xers identify either boss or kids based on their behavior. And traditionally, it's based on, are they a later X or an earlier X? And that's really what drives that behavior.
So one of the themes that keeps coming up in your book is engagement. Can you talk a little bit about how leaders can foster greater engagement and maybe about why it's so important?
I do want to talk to all of my CPA leaders, all of you bosses and kids that have really focused on developing these systems and processes, and your education has been driven around getting your CPA and being a professional accountant. You operate in a world of professional services, and I've been fortunate enough to get to know very, very well multiple CPAs, either through my family or through very close friends that are in the professional services. And one thing that I want to talk about is the importance of engagement. If you want to transform your team's potential into a higher level of performance, the answer here, and this has been proven conclusively by Aon, by Gallup, and to an extent, a combination that was a study that was done by Deloitte and Best Places to Work. We know that engagement is the driver of productivity, being more safe, being more happy, fewer sick days, less employee theft, fewer mistakes, all of these things that you as a leader care about. If you want to drive your team to that higher level of performance, if you feel like your team has become stagnant, I would encourage you to invest in your people. We say that leadership is the art and science of getting things done through other people. If you're trying to do it all yourself, if you are being that micromanager, you are definitionally creating a self-limiting team of one. You will never be able to do more than what you are capable of. Great leaders, transformational leaders that transform their team's potential into high performance, they invest their time in three key areas. Write these down. Number one, they invest in communicating. Cotter said in 1998 that organizations going through change under-communicate by a factor of 10. That was 20 years ago. So how much more important is communication today? Great leaders invest in communication. Number two, they invest in setting strategy and direction. They drive clarity of mission and alignment in everything that they do. Your people cannot set strategy for you. Can it be a collaboration? Can you engage your key lieutenants? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, it is your responsibility. You are accountable for setting strategy and direction. Finally, number three, great leaders invest their time in developing their people, in growing their people. That takes an intentional investment in your time to ensure that they have the opportunity to learn and grow, as well as the means to learn and grow.
So that was Robbie Riggs, one of the co-authors of Counter Mentor Leadership, How to Unlock the Potential of the Four Generation Workplace. And this has been the Journal of Accountancy podcast. Thank you for listening.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.